Hey, everybody.
Let me tell you guys that I am so excited. I am so happy. I am really so thrilled to be right now sharing this amazing, glorious,
yeah, we're super live. We're back with the Financial Independent Podcast. And today we are back with Ken Courtright and Kerry Courtright. Multiple book authors, I guess, founders of the Income Store. And Income Store is not the only business you've started, right? It's you have a deep background in business, right?
Yeah, we've done, this is probably our fourth, I guess, serial business. However, the main business of consulting has always been around since the early 90s. We've just done other things along the way as well.
That sounds great. So maybe can you just do a brief introduction to the listeners who are listening and they do not maybe know about you, what your backgrounds are, and how did you come up to found Income Store?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, we've been together for 31 years. How far back do you want us to go? That's a long story. Ken and I met in college, and by the time we left college, we actually had our first company, and it was a sign company / business growth company. And we did that for 10 years, actually, yeah. For a full 10 years. And along the way, we had a passion of watching videos because we'd work all day, all night, a good, 18 hours a day. Then we'd crash at nighttime. We thought, what else do you do if you have no energy? So we like to watch videos. This is when they were VHS tapes way back once upon a time. Yeah. And so there was a local video store that was for sale, and we decided that we would pick that up too. Might as well. We're entrepreneurs. Why would we keep giving them all that money? Plus, we didn't want them to close because they couldn't find a seller. So we thought we'd keep them open and then also make it a personal thing for us. And that's actually our first video store. And we ended up having a chain of video stores before Blockbuster grew and Hollywood grew and whatnot. So that's actually how we started way back, way, way, way in college, was with a sign company, business growth company, and a chain of video stores before we ended up morphing into what we have today, which is Income Store.
Yeah. So I'll jump in now. So our first, from 92 to 2009, we were fundamentally growth consultants. We would walk into a business, ask a bunch of questions, make some recommendations. Sometimes we'd recommend an indoor window sign or a big outdoor electric sign or a radio, 6 months of a radio series, whatever we thought would help the business. And then in 2009, we basically came head to head with this thing called the internet. And we made a decision that the internet is so pervasive and so basically wide open that we knew with our model, we can grow any business in any industry at any time. We knew with that motto, it was better served helping every business with an internet platform. And so we made a hard pivot. We had no understanding or experience with websites. But in 2009, we made a decision when it came to growing somebody else's business or somebody else's household revenue. We were going to basically take their money in exchange for a managing contract on a website. And so if you ever heard of a big medical site called WebMD, does about $600 million a year in passive advertising. And we modeled that website. And so we studied it. We figured out how it made so much money passively. And then we began building many, many versions of WebMD for businesses, for homeowners. And we helped, well, at this point, thousands of people become internet entrepreneurs by us managing their websites. And so that's what we still do today. We've gotten, very, very lucky along the way, met some incredible people. And in the last 7 years, we've become a 6-time Inc. 5000 company because we're managing now close to 2,000 websites for others. And we receive half the revenue as part of our fees for doing so. So that's kind of the quick, short, and dirty of what we do.
Ken, what is actually your background? Did you study web design, or how did you get into this industry?
So interestingly enough, both Kerry and I's kind of college backgrounds mesh together. Kerry's political science, I'm graphic design. Our first foray into business with growth consulting with a sign company twist was graphic design. A lot of what we do today is very political, meaning we're overseas a lot. We just got back from 2 weeks from China. And so Carrie's background and my background are perfect to run a pretty large growth consulting business today.
And it seems like you had like a period of transition in 2009, right? With a kind of introduction of internet and internet becoming very, very big. Can you maybe tell us a little bit more how you transitioned from basically going to the stores and telling them, oh yeah, you should put a sign in your window and this is going to do this for your business, to actually doing this online? What was the difference? And I guess this is a question for both of you guys.
Well, I'll let Carrie talk about something called S-curves, which we're very passionate about, but I'll lead into S-curves with this. Mm-hmm. We spent 15 years telling people that you need to put the biggest sign you possibly can on the street your business is on, because the bigger the sign, the more people will possibly see you. And the more people that see you, the more people can come in your door. Well, the busiest, most trafficked street in the world is the internet superhighway. And so we began, instead of building big signs in front of businesses, we began building very big websites in front of businesses. And so the bigger we could get their website, meaning the more traffic, the more money their business could make or their household could make. But I'm actually going to turn it over to Carrie. She's going to kind of cover a topic we call an S-curve. And it's really the foundation of our company. It's what we're all about, and it's what we bring to independent individuals and businesses.
Sure. Yeah, so S-curves are, every company needs to have more than one vertical in order to run their business. Even like pizza companies, if you look at your neighborhood pizza joint, they're going to have a thin crust, a thick crust, they're going to have different toppings and whatnot. Those are different verticals. Or they might have sandwiches and salads and whatnot. To just have one business, just have one stream of revenue, it's going to fall apart. Every one stream of anything falls apart. People change jobs now every year and a half. So we look at Income Store as just another S-curve on top of your business. It's another revenue stream. Every company needs another revenue stream, and this one is a passive income. This requires no time and effort of the person who actually works with us. It's just another revenue stream for their business, for their household, or for their nonprofit.
Yeah, I have a follow-up question. You said that basically the big street changed from being a localized big street like in New York to actually being the highway of the internet. What made you realize this? Was there certain indicators where you realized, oh yeah, it's not anymore physical, there's so much traffic online, and this is where actually we should go? Was there a certain event that made you realize this, or something else?
It was two things. As growth consultants, Carrie and I have to spend a lot of our time listening to what's going on in the world. Carrie is a very big proponent of reading everything out there. She reads the Financial Times, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times. So she makes sure that what goes into her brain is not just, say, information from the United States. It's got to be global information. And when you are absorbing that much information from so many different sources, you see things a little bit different. So the first thing that we saw was, number one, the mass consolidation of every industry. So let's look at banks first. In the banking world, in the late 90s, there were 10,000 banks. Today, those 10,000 different banks are down to 600 major banks. You then go into the video chain industry. If you've ever heard of Blockbuster in the video business ended up with 4,000 stores. What the world doesn't know, those 4,000 stores, 2,000 of them were independent mom and pops that they bought, that they changed out the name and the sign out front. So they basically consolidated the video industry. Amazon has also consolidated what used to be over 150,000 independent website stores. They have literally stopped those website stores and closed them, and they now only sell on Amazon. That's called internet consolidation. So we saw consolidation happening. And we saw a lot of consolidation going to the internet, even in 2007, 8. And that's when in 2009, we realized, okay, wait a minute. If we are going to make a name for ourselves the next 25 years, we have got to walk into businesses and explain to them if you're already on the internet, you're not on the internet big enough. And if you're not on the internet at all, let us help you bridge into the internet. And that's somewhat what made us famous.
Yeah, that completely makes sense. So Kerry mentioned the S-curve and the concept that businesses, if they want to be resilient in the fast-moving environment, they have to have different verticals and they have to have different streams of income. And do you consider income store to be one of those streams for the business when you approach a business?
And absolutely.
Yeah, please.
No, absolutely. Income store is definitely as another revenue stream for a business, but it's also for a household or for a not-for-profit. We have a lot of not-for-profits mm-hmm. who take the money that they have, that people give them, because especially for not-for-profits, they've got to raise funds every single year. Every year, they're always, every day, always having a charity event or whatnot. It's rare when they actually have money has been given to them that just has enough money that they can live off the interest. So it's actually for everyone. There's a lot of people, individual people, who have enough websites through Income Store that they no longer work. It's a passive income. They don't have to go to work every day, and they get to pursue what they'd like to pursue in life. And which leads me to giggle, because we were looking at your website today, and you're talking about, you know, one of the negatives of being independently financially independent. Ken and I were smiling at that, because one of the drawbacks that we see is that there are not enough people financially independent to play with. You know, in the middle of the day when we want to go do something, when no one's at the shopping mall or no one's at the golf course, or, you know, that's young like us, right? Or no one, yeah. there's room to go to that afternoon baseball game. Finding people to go with us is difficult. So I would say that was also a negative. But going back to the S-curves, you know, Income Store is a way for a company to grow, someone to stay home, pursue a dream, or whatever they need to do, buy a house for their mom and dad. So yeah, Income Store is definitely a passive revenue, another revenue stream for whomever.
So it seems like for a, let's say, a person, or not a company itself, but an individual, he offers them a way to transition from selling your time for money to actually owning an asset and not having to sell your time and live a 9-to-5 life and actually earn money by owning assets that are digital.
Exactly. We actually built our website, incomestore.com, expressly because we knew that the world is broken down in two categories. People either have time and very little money. They're chasing money all the time. And they're almost perpetually semi-broke financially. Or people break through, and then they have a ton of money, but they have no time. Everybody wants their time. So Income Store, the website, has door number one, which is for people that have absolutely no money but tons of time. And there is over 1,100 different free books, podcasts, videos that show the world. And just to give you some idea, we have over 2,000 people a day that hit door number one to learn how to do what we do for free. And they're basically every move we make of how we grow a website, how we grow a business, we literally annotate it and we put it under door number one, because life changes. And so what you can see in door number one is, how did we build all of these assets? How are they maintained? How do they keep growing? So that's door number one. Door number two, if you have money but necessarily no time, that's for you. It's everything under door number two is the done for you packages of, you know, if you just sold a piece of property, you have 300 grand, what do we have for that? If you just sold something, you got $1 million, what do we have for that? If you just sold something, or you're about to retire, you have 150 grand, what do we have something for that? So door number one, door number two, they're completely different. Kerry and I just finished a 2-year writing assignment of a book. We call it Rally, 19 Growth Techniques You Have Never Heard Of. That's also going to go under door number one. You know, that one might have a price tag of maybe $5-$10. We're not sure yet, but that's the last 2 years of our life's work. It should be, I think, October 17th that goes up under door number one, so somewhere. So, but you know, we live and breathe for the people that have time and no money, because Kerry and I, we spent 5 years there when we were 20 to 25. You know, we were young, naive. Nobody trusted us in business, and we were just perpetually broke trying to build our businesses. And, you know, we look back, it was some of the greatest times, but, you know, we never knew if we could put gas in the car. So with respect to that, we know we went through that and it got us to where we are today. So we have literally over 1,000 different pieces of material for people that are in that phase, because we know 10% of those people are going to break through and eventually they can go to door number two.
And when you approach companies and consult companies, do you see the certain mistakes, certain inefficiencies that are repeating itself over and over again as to where you can start as a consultant?
Yeah, for sure. Carrie and I could probably say there's 25 to 30 common mistakes. You know, year after year, we find ourselves in these mastermind groups, or we end up doing what we call fireside chats, and we'll go around in a circle of 30 people, and we'll start about 9 p.m. It finishes about 1 in the morning, and we won't stop till everybody gets to speak, and we basically ask this question: what industry are you in, and what is your biggest business challenge today? And we have done this again for close to 20 years, roughly, on and off, and we seldom hear something we didn't hear 15 years ago. There's nothing new. You know, the fundamental principles of the mistakes people make, and one of them is already clearly displayed on your website. The biggest mistake is lack of belief in oneself. They don't want to take a chance. Your one article was really well written about, you know, what are the goods and bads about being financially independent. And one of the bads is people don't take a chance on themselves. They're afraid to take a risk. And so we hear that a lot. We have tools to help people with that. So fundamentally, you know, you're exactly right that it's the same thing over and over.
Mm. And just a question regarding like one metric, recurring revenue. I mean, your whole business model is recurring revenue. Would you say that far too many companies are underestimating the power of recurring revenue and the like some sort of contract subscriptions ensuring stickiness of customers?
Yeah, I'll give you the answer is yes, we see that a lot. And the proof that companies are lacking recurring revenue is all you have to do is go into Google and type in the search top 100 businesses sold. In some way, shape, or form, ask Google, what are the 100 largest business sales of all time? And you will notice 80 of the 100 are things like Lynda.com, Dollar Shave Club, Mint.com. These are companies that were bought for 40, 42, 44 times net earnings. And these companies were bought for one simple reason. They all had incredibly powerful net residual monthly recurring revenue. Lynda.com had the largest email list of all time and the largest monthly recurring revenue. Dollar Shave Club had the second. So both of these businesses were bought for $1 to $1.4 billion cash at 40 plus times earnings. Most businesses sell for 3 times earnings. So, but most businesses don't have recurring revenue. And one of the things Carrie and I go in guns blazing teaching and coaching people is you've got to get an S curve that brings in some form of a residual passive revenue that once you build it or have us build it or somebody else build it, it's built on some form of a subscription or recurring revenue from advertising, from visitors to a website, something like that.
Yeah, okay. And you mentioned the S-curve again, and I guess my question is, the concept, have you used the concept of KPIs? I know that I worked for 2 or 3 startups, and in the startup world, especially if you talk to incubators like Techstars, they really, not force, but they really pay attention to teaching startups KPIs because, or key performance indicators, because they believe that it's very important to keep your focus. So maybe, can you tell us how you applied or did you apply these concepts before? What do you think about this?
Absolutely. You have to have KPIs. You have to have goals. They have everyone in the company, everyone in the company. And we're not just talking about the C-suite or the managers. Everyone all the way down to the person that's in front of the customer has to know what the expectations are from them and of them. But on top of knowing, having KPIs, and on top of having those expectations, the most important thing, which is what most companies don't do is they don't follow up to make sure that those KPIs are being met. So, and on top of that, and once in a while, you may have to change it in a week. It might not be the right KPI once you introduce any KPI. So they always have to be re-evaluated. Are they the correct KPIs? Are they the right indicators for your company and at the right time? Especially if you're in retail, your KPIs are going to be a lot different in December and January than they are in July. So KPIs are ongoing. It's not once in a while. It's not, hey, you wrote it down and now you did it. It's you wrote it down. Now you're inspecting it. You have the expectation it's going to get done. You're re-inspecting it. And there's follow through on there. So yeah, we do believe in KPIs.
And another maybe follow-up question. You said that there is an evaluation process of the KPIs themselves. You know, maybe probably depending on the business, but how often do companies reevaluate, the successful companies reevaluate their KPIs? And yeah.
A lot of companies, a lot of companies are evaluating every single week. So I have a friend who used to have a very important position in the chain, Burger King. And he and I had a conversation on just the subject, and every week, most companies just reevaluate every month. He said, no, what we did is every single week. So you have to do what's right for your company. Sometimes it can be cumbersome and take too much time, and you're so worried about that, the KPIs, that you're actually not being fruitful and productive in your position. So, but at least on a monthly or bi-monthly basis, depending on the position and what level in the company that you're in, because again, they can change depending on the situation, depending on the environment. Right now, if we want to talk about what's hot in society or hot in politics, you've got KPIs that are nowhere near going to be met in Hong Kong. So you have to reevaluate as your climate, not just the season.
And next to KPIs, do you also use other concepts like Kaizen or Six Sigma to drive growth or to make sure that everything, that everybody is on track, so to say?
Yeah, we actually do. We're right in the middle of shifting two different what are called candlestick programs, but both are Six Sigma based and both use a red light, yellow light, green light techniques. So I'll walk you through what our 100 employees do in Pennsylvania. So what happens is a manager will meet with an employee, and I'll give you a real world example of one that went down in this past January. And we had a division that was writing 14 million words of content a month across hundreds of websites. And I was the manager of this group. I said to the assistant manager, I said, okay, we're doing about 14 million. What would be a goal that you would feel very, very proud hitting in 90 days? And he said, well, personally, I think we could do 16 million, which would be a bump up of 2 million words with the same team. And I said, okay, let's go into the system. We set a goal of 16 million that became green. I said to the gentleman, I said, what would be amazing? What would just blow your mind? What would be something you might even be expecting a bonus on? He said, well, if I could hit 17 million, that would almost be too good to be true, but it could be, I guess, possible. So that became a hunter green or a super green. And I said to him, you're at 14 million right now. What number in 90 days would you feel like a failure? And he said, well, probably 14.5. I would probably think I failed. I didn't grow enough. So we went into the system. We set a red light at 14.5 in 90 days. We set a green light at 17 million. And a yellow was anything right in between. And then a hunter green was 17 million. And then what was great about this Six Sigma type of system, this candlestick system, is the person doing the work set the color code. I didn't. I was the manager. I didn't set the expectation. The person doing the work set the expectation. And even though he was the manager of the people doing the work. But the point is, ironically, they finished 90 days later at 16.2. And they hit that number. And then, of course, 90 days later, we went in and did the whole thing again. But the key thing of this Six Sigma candlestick thing, you don't wait 90 days. The KPIs show themselves every Friday. And like Carrie's talking about, could you imagine if we waited 90 days and they were on track to do 14.5 million? Well, that's too late. You lost the whole quarter. You've got to track it every week. And luckily, the system we used was showing that immediately this person was immediately within 10 days in the green zone. And so we left him alone to manage his group. And had it been yellow or red, we as the management would have got involved to jump in and say, okay, do you need more resources? Do you need more money? Do you need more people? What do you need to make this green? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it makes perfect sense. And I noticed one thing when you were explaining the Six Sigma method is basically your relation to the employees, where you ask them to set their own goals. There are many companies where the management itself would set the goal and be like enforcing the goal. What do you have certain types of checks and balances for your own self when you manage your employees to kind of stay down to earth and to realize that actually asking them for what their own opinion will actually drive more success than you yourself assuming something and putting those KPIs?
Yeah, we work with every level. And that's how I kind of started earlier, is every level of the company is important. In fact, the closer that an employee is to the client themselves, they're actually the most important person. We met with a gentleman who ran one of the top five hotel chains in the world. And he said that actually one of the most important people in his company is the one that made sure that the bathrooms are clean, because that's the part of the company that almost everybody sees at his company when you walk into the door. And that's the truth. That's what if I were to walk into a hotel, even if I'm deciding whether I'm not going to use it, I'm going to look at the lobby. I'm going to look at how am I greeted. And then if I have to use the restroom, I'm using the restroom. And unfortunately, so many companies see that person who's cleaning the restroom as, you know, just replaceable. Yeah, the person could be replaceable, but that is actually a huge reflection upon the company. So we spend a lot of time with our frontline people, a lot of time training. How are you doing? Getting their input, because they're the ones speaking with the clients themselves. And the client is telling them what the client wants. You can do all of the studies you want to find out who your best client is, but when you got it for free, when your client is telling your employees for free exactly what they want, what they like, what they don't like, that's the best information that you can get. So we spend a lot of time talking to everyone in the company, getting everyone's input. So when we do put our strategy together for the company, we are taking their input, because they know, they're on the front line. They know what's important to the client, not what we think is important to the client. So then when it comes, as we go up the ladder and we're doing different tasks that maybe are further away, we are actually including our employees, because they can also tell us what they can do, what they want to show us they can do. That's a big part, is people want responsibility. And if they have say in what they're going to do when they spend 33% of their life, which is at work, they have a say in it, and they're going to tell you and show and prove to the company what they can do and possibly get a promotion. Of course, we're going to take that input. Now, is it 100%? Let's be honest. Often as a company, you have a higher view. You see a bigger view because you're looking into the future. So we do not always take every bit of input, but we try to do as much as we can with that, as well as include them in the conversation. Because they're happy, we're happy, and everyone all around is more productive.
That sounds great. And just a follow-up question. How do you think that communicating the vision of the entire company, even if you're in the management, is how important it is to communicate the vision even on the people, especially with the people on the field? And do you have any techniques? Do you have meetings? How do you approach this, part of the business?
This one is a little bit tricky, because over the years, our company, we have grown so fast. Again, we're a six-timing 5,000 company. So when we were 10 to 20 people, it was very, very easy to get literally every employee on a Zoom. We would almost do this on a weekly basis. And then you would literally just bleed in the company core values, the mission statement, the vision statement, things like that. As you get bigger, we found ourselves doing 10-minute monthly meetings whenever we flew to the office. And at our current size right now, I'm going to admit that I think we could do a better job casting a vision or a mission across the board. But we literally, a month ago, started really reevaluating. Carrie and I are actually going for our executive MBAs at Pepperdine in California. And it kind of rekindled the idea of getting the mission and the vision in front of the team. But as Carrie just said, I got to bring it up again. We did an exercise. It took a full year. We brought in a consultant. And our people are the ones that came up with our 20 and now 10, 12 core values. Our people helped us shape the vision and mission statement of the company. So it's posted everywhere. They have to walk past it. But that's one thing. There's another thing to stand up in front of them, like the Ritz-Carlton company that Carrie just mentioned that we just heard from. They have a credo. They literally every morning, they speak it out loud. We don't do that. We do make an effort on an annual basis to review it. But, you know, that's something I, getting off this call, I'm going to probably write down and take a note and maybe see if we could do a better job of that.
Can you quickly go into the values and the metrics you use just in general, what actually made the company, or because I'm looking at your revenue since 2016, you are in the two digit revenue area. So, and you are 77 million awaiting 77 million revenue in 2019. So what are you using to foster such growth?
Yeah. So I would tell you right now, the fundamental principle of our company is, would we do for a client what we would do for our family and friends? That is the underpinning of our company. So I'll give you some examples. We have a contract that in the middle of the contract, we have a clause that says, if we make a mistake with your website, we are going to do whatever we have to do to fix it 100%. We've broken code on accident. We've had people's websites physically go down for an hour, hour and a half. Doesn't seem like a big deal. But when your brand and your reputation is running through that website, you know, that road's got to be open at all times. And so the bottom line is it's sometimes painful that we got to wake people up at 2 a.m. to get them to get those servers back up. We had a flood once. We had 10 sites go down for almost an hour. Wow. So, you know, the bottom line is it doesn't seem like a big deal. But when you look at your clients' websites and assets, like you would look at it if it was your own personal asset or your family's, you know, we attack every problem as if it's our own. And I think over the years that has just really played itself out very well for our clients.
Yeah, that makes complete sense, at least for me. I mean, from my personal experience, anytime I'm managing somebody else's money, I feel more obligated to manage it correctly than if it's my own. You mentioned, just to go back, you mentioned that you added a new department in Income Store, and you, I guess you added a new CEO. Can you talk a little bit more about this and what's your approach to growth internally and what's behind this new additions? Why?
Yeah, for sure.
Where is it
so
going?
Every company at some point hits their level of incompetence. And that means that the collective management, basically the intellectual property of that management team, has got the company as far as they probably can take it. Einstein has a famous saying, the brain that got you into a problem typically can't solve the problem. You need somebody else's brain to help you. So we realized after doubling from 12 to 25 million, 25 to 50 million, it was very, very clear in late 2018 that we absolutely could double again to 100 million, but we could feel the stress and strain of on management, on our portfolio, on our people. And we just started talking, and the vote was unanimous between Carrie and I that we have a couple choices. We could either both of us go for our executive MBAs and sharpen our saw and get our intellectual property better, or B, we could go find somebody that has ran a company of 300 million to $1 billion that's basically been there, done that, and seen everything we're about to walk into. And being the type of people we are, we decided to do both. So we went to our executive MBA and we started asking around and interviewing people and got very, very lucky and blessed and found the ex-COO of TD Ameritrade. And we ended up plucking him out of retirement. And he has now been with us 60 days, and he's an amazing human being.
And I'm going to add to that, because our staff is who they are and they know that they're well cared for, meaning that we believe in them as much as they believe in the company, that the one of the biggest fears of having a new CEO actually in our interview process was, how is the staff going to receive me? I usually walk in and they're on their toes and they're concerned and pins and needles. And we assured him that they're waiting. They will be open-armed, excited for you to come. And that's exactly, he 2 weeks into the job, he said, I just can't believe you were not just blowing smoke and lying to me. He goes, the team, the company, the people are really excited that I'm here. And Ken and I will get weekly emails. What's a highlight of your week? Because that's another way we can communicate with the team is we have this thing called a 5x15. They take 15 minutes and they write me a note that I takes no longer than 5 minutes for me to read, just as gives me an update of the team. And weekly, I get so glad he's here. So glad he's here. So it's been a win-win for everyone because they knew we were at our level and they were looking for better leadership, more leadership, more ability to refine and hone tune their skills. And again, to show someone else, show the next person what they are capable of doing.
Yeah. And this, for me, it sounds like a perfect example of where if you create a company culture, it pays off in ways you can't never actually foresee, I guess.
Exactly.
And okay, so I want to ask you, let's say, what do you think, where is Income Store going to be 3 to 5 years from now with all the changes coming in, I guess, to close out the podcast?
Yeah, we're pretty sure of where it's going. Our guesstimations are we've doubled staff each of the last 6 years. We're technically over 200 people right now. So I don't see any reason why 3 years from today we're not in the 500 to 700 employee range. Probably the majority of that overseas. We're very big into Romania right now. We have a big office there. We're big into Manila in the Philippines. We're starting to open an office in India. We have a lot of tech and programmers, and some of the best people in the world are overseas. So we're just going to keep, going forward. David Kelly, the new CEO, and Carrie and I are an incredible team. All three of us, in our own way, are visionary. We're very tactical. And my guesstimation is we're going to keep doubling in headcount. We're certainly going to keep doubling in size and revenue and every measurable thing that counts. Because the reality is, the bigger we get, the more people we employ, the more people we send, great kids to college, and that's what we believe we're put on planet Earth to do.
Well, guys, I guess this is a perfect ending to the podcast. And I guess thank you very much for, again, joining the Financially Independent podcast. Maybe to conclude, can you just tell our listeners once again where they can find you? I know you both wrote books. I know you you can present the company as well. And please.
You can reach either of us or both of us or just the company itself at IncomeStore.com. That's income, like you earned an income and then you spent it at the store, IncomeStore.com.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much. And I guess that will be all for today. Have a great day, guys.